The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkFile. I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Welcome to the SparkFile, your one-stop picnic basket for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're an OG listener, welcome back, Sparkler. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to you. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a Spark file? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are such good questions, and we do have answers.
A Spark file is a place where you consistently collect all your inspirations and fascinations.
Here's the deal. We are makers, and we are making all kinds of things.
If you're like us, and you're making stuff all the time, or you want to be making stuff all the time, you know that the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry.
So we're on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a daytime disco that rocks your socks off.
I'm optimistic about the spark. Or a way to creatively resolve the unresolved.
Ooh. Interesting. Every episode, we're going to reach into our spark files and exchange some sparks. And from time to time, we're going to talk to some folks who spark us too.
And if you're not careful, you might just get through your creative to-do list. So without further ado, let's open up
the spark file.
Camion.
Blackwell.
This is my favorite day of all the days. This is the day we share sparks. I am looking forward to whatever it is you're about to.
Oh, I'm excited. I got a little ditty today that is like maybe a mini sparks, like a bite-sized morsel.
Oh, well, that's good because I've got a full-bodied, going to take some time to unpack
that
spark.
Oh, this is going to work out.
It might be a wonderful compliment.
Well, we're about to find out.
Are you going to go fierce?
Yeah, I'll go fierce.
I welcome it.
And this little spark I came across, it is small but mighty. It kind of packed a lot of emotional punch for me, so I thought it might be a little, but it's a lot.
She's a lot.
Make sense of that. So here's a little teaser that drew me in. When the music comes on, my body is immersed in it and all my pain disappears.
Oh, you know what that reminds me of, like right off the jump?
What?
We did that spark about the art of dying well, and there was a gentleman who was laying in hospice. The Threshold Singers came to visit, and when they sang to him, he said it relieved his pain.
His pain.
Yeah, it reminds me of that.
Mm-hmm.
I like this.
Mm-hmm.
I like
You're
it already.
Like where this is going.
I just want to make sure everybody knows before we really launch that my dog, Kitty Bunny, is in my sweatshirt as we record this.
It's the best.
And I just
want everyone jealous.
I wanted to have said it because if she decides to liberate at some point,
oh, we'll know.
It's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that's fair warning.
There's peace in the kingdom right now, but we'll see.
Listeners, I hope you're listening to this with a sweet little pup up your sweatshirt. Okay. I stumbled. That's my wish for you all.
And also, if anybody has this is a side spark. If anybody ever needs to get me a gift, make sure if it's clothing that you can fit two dogs inside of it. Two small dogs. That's what I'm going
inside.
For now. I've let go of fashion aspirations and it's just about can it fit two small dogs? It's got to be washable
inside.
Too, because when you fit two small dogs in your clothes, guess
you
what
need
needs to be
wash
washed?
It.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt you. You were going to spark it up.
No, but I'm so glad I was thinking. Now, what gifts do I need to get Susan?
My birthday is coming up.
That's right. So this is good information for all.
There you go.
Great. We got the important stuff out of the way. Let's get to some sparks.
Sounds good.
So I stumbled upon this article in Vice this week, and it has brought me so much joy just thinking about it. What was that Mary Oliver quote you said?
Hold the line. I'm going to get it for you.
I need it in my life. Like, I need to reference it. It killed me with delight.
Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight.
Yes, yes.
This killed this you with delight.
Killed me with delight. So here it is. Picture a rave club. It's dark. It's hot. Picture hair dyed, all kinds of colors, costume jewelry, capes and hats, full on like artistic makeup that makes a statement. Music so loud you can barely think. Bodies moving to the beat, laughter and joy and ecstasy on the dance floor.
You said bodies moving to the beat. For a second, I thought you said potties moving to the beat, which gave me this image of lots of dancing toilets. That's not what you meant. You mean human bodies swaying and sweating. And
that is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Slow motion
and
raving
ecstasy
out.
Ecstasy on the dance floor.
Yes.
Do you have a clear picture of it?
I'm with you.
Okay. Now imagine it's 2 p.m. on a weekday. Welcome to the Posh Club. According to Vice, it's an outrageous weekly cabaret-style party for people who, like the china the afternoon tea is served on, are all of a certain vintage. Every person in this room is 60 or older, mostly much, much older.
Amazing, right?
I thought I knew where you were headed. I thought we were headed into daybreakers.
No.
I thought like morning dance parties.
Uh-uh.
This is, you are taking me into territory I have never been in before.
I'm so excited about this. I can't even say. I am not even a dance club person, but I do know the joy of allowing yourself, allowing your body the freedom to move and express joy, however the music moves you. And I also remember my mom in her later years and the loneliness that I think set in.
Yeah.
There was a certain routine and things that she hadn't done in so long.
Like sure.
The idea of doing them would bring on a lot of anxiety, you know? So when I read about the Posh
Club. Like going
club,
to a rave.
Sure. Like going to a rave. But also my mom used to talk at length. I mean, my mom was ill for a long time. So she had a lot of recollections of her body as a healthy, really healthy body.
Sure.
And she would often say to us, as if she needed to remind herself as much as us, like, you know, when I was younger, I was like lithe and free and I climbed trees and I danced and I ran.
Yeah.
And it was important to reconnect with that part of herself. Yeah. So that's what I started to think about in terms of this. And when I read about the Posh Club, like I wish that there had been something like this for my mom to enjoy. I don't know if this exactly would be it, but
let's find out.
Yeah, but just something for her to get out there and move and connect with people. So according to this Vice article, this event is so East London. There's a host like dressed in a bow tie, shirt and hot pants, flapper girl groups for entertainment, and Elvis impersonator. In fact, that Elvis impersonator named Conrad Hamilton said, "When I first started performing here, I thought, retired people, relaxed gig, no problem. I could not have been more wrong. It is the only place I've ever had underwear thrown at me." There's a pause of recollection. "They were big granny panties," he said. I got such a kick out of that because, of course, like when you hit a certain age, I think you can have more of a sense of humor. Like there's just a freedom of like not having any more shits to give. Like you just don't. Just fuck it. You know what I mean? You can drop the pretenses and everyone has been through some tough shit. Everyone's been through health issues. There's no denying that they're all experiencing the aging process and there's no time or space left for pretense, you know?
Yeah.
So fuck it. Throw your granny panties. So there's a few reasons why this event is getting the attention that it is. First of all, it's completely legit. It's produced by one of London's premier party producers, Ducky. They've been promoting in London's top venues for over 20 years. It isn't a disco ball like in the dining room of a nursing home. This is like the real deal, fully produced, legit club scene event.
Wow.
So the whole thing came about because two of the founders of Ducky, Simon Casson and his sister, Annie Bowden dreamt it up as a way to help their mom. Their mom moved at age 80 to a new location, and she was really very lonely.
Yeah.
So they first pulled together a vintage tea party in her living room, like a small group of friends all in their 80s or 90s, and they played 1940s records on an old phonograph while they ate sandwiches and scones and sang along. That event was such a hit.
I'd be down with that.
I'm like, yeah, I'm so good.
That sounds fun.
Right? That little event was such a hit that Simon and Annie went a step bigger. They booked the local church hall. They sent invites far and wide across the town. They asked friends of theirs, so much younger friends, to be like the wait staff. They got a few more records. They brought in a few performer pals to entertain, and it was just a smashing success. And that is how the Posh Club was born.
Wow.
So one of the producers of the event said, "It's probably the most rewarding thing I've ever been involved with. What we're doing is really an anti-loneliness campaign presented as a club event. A lot of our guests maybe don't get out as much as they once did, don't see friends as often. Well, this provides a unique way to do both while also being part of something that's vibrant and exciting. Just because you reach a certain age doesn't mean you don't want to have fun anymore. I think society has a habit of forgetting that. And a lot of what we as younger people do enjoy ourselves, these guys, they've not only seen it and done it all, they invented most of it."
Amazing.
So that perspective is so crucial, like just a reminder, like whenever you think for a minute that our generation or the next generation is inventing everything. That's not really the case. But I just really loved how he described it as an anti-loneliness campaign.
I love that more than I can say.
It's beyond. It got me thinking about so many things, like your spark about forming a group of people like when we're younger.
Yes.
That will stick together through the years, like a regular get-together. And I thought about the times that I felt lonely when I was writing, and I've formed various writing groups or hosted writing dates with various configurations, which really is just an excuse to like be with people that I like, all doing something that we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And that's really all it takes to take the lonelies away. And so that's all a social club is, really, an anti-loneliness club. Now, the Posh Club has been running in various cities as much as possible, but they want to expand. And they've gotten just a ton of demand. Everyone wants to know, like, why can't we have that in our city? They've gotten grants to subsidize the events, which is great, but they're limited on how far that funding will go. But they estimate that more than 10,000 partygoers have been served by 200 volunteers across this little set of clubs that they've done each year. That's a lot of people who've been positively affected.
A lot. And it's volunteer. Like, I think volunteers. I'm just registering this.
Volunteers.
Yes.
So producer Dickie Eaton says, "We'd like to open more. We get people coming here from other cities while visiting friends or relatives. And they always say, why can't we have something like this where we live? So that's an ambition. But we need it to be quality, have the right atmosphere,
right,
and be done with love. Because if it doesn't have those things, it's not the Posh Club."
Yes.
And that stuck with me too.
I love this.
Right?
This is so good.
Done with love. Like, they're so clear on like what are the elements that are important to us, that it's quality, that it feels legit.
Yeah.
That it has the right atmosphere, not a cheapy little half-ass like we're just gathering people to make a buck.
Yeah.
But true care, and it has to be done with love.
Oh, this is so good.
It makes me so happy. I'm certain that that love can be felt, you know, at the event, that the event producers really care and want to make sure that the guests have a great time. Like, it's meaningful to them. So they do it with a lot of love and a bit of fun. Dickie Eaton also said, "We're probably the only club event in the world where someone was rushed to a hospital because they'd forgotten to take their drugs."
Oh, Dickie.
It seems like they have a sense of humor about it. It's just a good, good time. One of the attendees, who's 74 years old, said, "My mom was still dancing until she was 91. I want to beat that. Come back in 17 years and I hope I'll still be here. It's all about staying glamorous."
It really is that thing about like staying engaged with your mind, a little bit of movement, a bit of meaningful social engagement.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. This is the antidote to, I have this picture in my mind of a potential way of being for an older person that is like very solitary, like a lot of prior chapters of life have sort of concluded and shut down and like a lot of time alone at home, a lot of time just like TV keeping you company. And as an introvert, I have to keep an eye on this. Like I have to keep an eye on this and this, and I've never been like a big dance club person.
Right.
But this sounds, I have so many questions, but I don't want to jump your spark.
Well, I think like it interests me too, because like I didn't love dance clubs as a young person. So it's hard to imagine like, will this be the answer for me when I'm 80? But even looking at the pictures, there's so much in it, like the self-expression, getting out your fancy clothes again, doing your hair, even if it's in a, vintage style or a new style or a punk rock style or whatever, like they're just giving themselves so much freedom.
Yeah.
It's just all about having fun. I love it. I just love it. Like, just let loose.
Do you talk about like what kind of music do they play?
I don't know. I mean, in some of the events, they talked about playing music that these people would have listened to when they were younger.
Yeah.
Like the Elvis impersonator. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
But the people who are entertaining them are young people. So I think they've even had, you know, like ladies in pasties. I think they've had flapper girls.
Yeah.
I think they've had all kinds of like
burlesque kind of things.
Yeah. That anyone of any adult could go to. So why not them?
Yes. You know? God, this is
it's not
so
like they
good.
Haven't seen it all.
I feel like by the time I age up into the posh club, I feel like there's going to be a lot of Duran Duran being played.
Oh my God. Wham. Perhaps some Wham.
A lot of George Michael.
Okay.
Maybe some Spandau Ballet.
Okay.
We'll see when we get there.
I think there's going to be some good stuff though.
This is so interesting.
And so I started to poke around a little bit to see if anyone else is doing this sort of thing, you know, and I found a couple of interesting things to note. In South Korea, they are kind of, they have these government funded, they call them daytime disco clubs, and they're being supported specifically in order to combat senior loneliness, isolation, and dementia.
Amazing.
So thank you, South Korea. Like, I love a government who will see like, hey, it's worthwhile to put an investment in this. According to an article in the Good News Network, South Korea currently has the fastest aging population of any developed nation in the world. So they're getting a jump on it. One South Korean gentleman told the BBC, "I have a bad back and legs, but when the music comes on, my body is immersed in it and my pain disappears. I'm full of energy for 2 or 3 days after this."
Yes.
Right?
This is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
This is what I'm talking about.
I just got to say, it really does impress me when people in a country agree that our elderly have value and we should be continuing to tend to their needs, not just hit an age and then we're done with you.
Yes.
So I also read about a senior prom in Long Beach, California. And this was fun. They had like a 16-piece orchestra and swing dancing lessons, like to take you all the way back. But it seemed like a one-time deal. It was just like
a
one-time event that someone did. So I just think there's a lot of potential here.
There are so many sparks in this.
There's a grocery store chain in the UK that put in what they call, quote, talking tables for conversations between strangers to happen.
Ooh.
Interesting, right? So you might go there and sit down and see if anyone joins you to have a conversation because you are, you know, and again, because grocery store is somewhere that presumably everyone needs to go at one time or another. But if you're feeling lonely and you want to talk to someone about anything, sit there. But they also would bring in like local charities and volunteers for people to talk to anyone who comes over to sit down, you know, that is looking for some human connection.
This would be a good job for me.
Good.
I've often thought like that might be a good piece of volunteering for me, even to go to like a nursing home or something like that and just like let people talk and bring their stories up to the surface.
Oh, you would be so good at that.
I hope that, I know he's not like certified, but to take POTUS, my dog, with me so he could just sit in people's laps. I feel like it would be such a, but I don't know. He's not well trained and he would lick people's faces and they might not like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's rules about that sort of thing, but I do know POTUS is a comfort to me. That's for sure. When he snuggles
he is
up,
a comfort
it's
to
like
all of us.
There is nothing like it.
Yeah. No offense to you, Kitty, shoved in my sweatshirt
Kitty
right now.
Kitty is awesome as well.
Kitty's acting as my hot water bottle.
I actually love them equally, whereas I think you show a preference.
Oh.
I'm teasing you. You're like, do I really? No,
I'm
think
sure,
Kitty Bunny is equally snuggly.
She is snuggly, but she also is mouthy. So
like
you can never
bites.
Take her to a senior living facility.
That's right.
Because she would just like maul some old lady's papery little hand.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I think that would be
a great spark. So this is in the UK.
It's a grocery store chain in the UK that put in these quote talking tables. Yeah. I just think it's, again, it's signs that people understanding what elderly people need. In this case, anyone, like human
some
connection,
yeah,
you know,
connection.
Everyone's craving it in some way. So, you know, pop in and sit down at a table and talk to a stranger, knowing that is the intention, you know. But I also read about a program called Nuns and Nuns. This is the pairing of a nun, as in the Catholic Church, N-U-N, and a nun, millennial. These are defined as younger people who check none of the above in any religious preference questions. So if they're asked like, what, you know, what do you believe in?
Yeah.
Or what are you in? None of the above.
Yeah.
So they call it Nuns and Nuns. And they team up a nun with a millennial and they share thoughts and ideas and companionships and form friendships.
Meaningful engagement.
Again, this is in the UK. And
UK's got it going on.
They do. And in some places, they're trying out a new idea where the younger person can actually get affordable housing in the convent. Is that where they live? They live in a convent,
sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah.
And what they can do in exchange is just help the elderly nuns in return. I mean, they're finding that like it's a benefit to everyone. It makes so much sense.
Wow.
So what do we make of all of this? First of all, if you write characters of all ages,
yes,
it's just such a great reminder of the full humanity of a person, regardless of their age.
Yes. Amen.
You know what I mean? Like, we just don't often get characters of older people that are living a full experience. I think The Posh Club is a great setting for a scene,
oh
a comedy or a tragedy, frankly. I think
fantastic.
There's so much potential.
A play, a movie.
It's a great way to have characters meet, multi-generational characters.
If there's other people that have Posh Club like ideas,
yes,
to create those happenings, like volunteer based happenings.
That's right.
For people in the community. That's an amazing spark.
I just wrote, like, what about hosting a party yourself or check in on an older person that you know? Find out if they're getting out enough. They might just crave more contact with others, but they might be afraid to ask for it, you know? If you have a skill to share, might you share that with people who are older or younger than you? You know what else you could do? You can celebrate someone older. A few weeks back, did you see this comment that was going around on social media? I'm so sorry. I cannot credit this woman because I don't remember. But someone essentially posted something about the ridiculousness that we have all of these like 20 under 20 lists, 30 under 30. And she pointed out that, you know, we're always celebrating the speed with which someone accomplishes something and how young they are is the focus. But there's no list to celebrate those who like figured it out after a certain age or
that.
Maybe kept pushing to accomplish something they'd always wanted, maybe switched careers and are now doing something worth noting. Well, she posted this thought and it got a ton of traffic on social media. Mm. Like I saw it in a number of places. And I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but you know, in my line of business, I don't believe in coincidence. I'm kidding. Sorry, I just, isn't that in every bit of writing? Every bit of like FBI?
You know, in my line of business.
I don't believe in coincidences.
And coinkydinkuses.
So I don't know if this was a coincidence or not, but Forbes just announced that they're partnering with the Know Your Worth initiative, and they are doing a list for the first time ever, 50 over 50.
Oh.
They say they're committed to shining a light on a group of 50 diverse women who have achieved significant success later in life, often by overcoming formidable challenges or odds. The nominations are open now. So honestly, if you can think of someone, get out there and nominate some incredible woman that you know.
Wow.
Word.
Amazing.
That is my mini spark. It's short and it's sweet, but it really moved me.
It's a sweet spark. I'm moved by it too. And as you were talking, one of the things I make of this is I have an older friend who I was just thinking this morning, noticeably not hearing back as much, like a little bit less responsive to texts and emails.
Yep.
And they don't live near me. So it's going to require a little more, that I'd be a little more tenacious.
Yeah.
And even going to where they are to make sure that, because I think there's a little bit of a struggle as they age with remaining engaged.
Yeah.
And so what can I do to have a positive impact on that person's life?
That's right.
There's a mini spark from your spark.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love anything that like rearranges the furniture in my brain, you know, that had been there for a long time.
Yes.
And it's like, ooh, a fresh perspective on this.
Yeah.
Things I hadn't thought about before.
What a great spark.
Thanks.
You little sparkly sparkler.
Thank you. It really brought me a lot of delight. It killed me with delight this week. It did. This article really did.
I'm killed with delight.
Mm-hmm.
Should we take a little breaky poo?
Sure. The spark bug! Freshly peed.
Freshly peed. Cams, that was so good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
I love that. And I thought I knew where you were headed, and you totally took a left turn at Albuquerque.
I love that too. Where did you think I was going?
I thought for sure you were headed to, do you know Daybreakers?
I feel like I do.
Daybreakers
but I
is
don't.
Like that early morning dance, heart, like sober dancing.
For like any age.
Like
all
any
people.
Age, you get up and you dance your pants off before you go to your job.
Is that sort of like aerobics? I mean,
maybe there's an exercise component. There's a social component. There's also a like greet the day component.
Huh. Yeah, maybe that's another
instead of caffeine
spark for another
instead
day.
Of a cup of coffee. Yeah, go to Daybreakers.
Daybreakers.
I've got a spark
Ooh.
For you, but it is.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's a
doozy.
A biggie. It's
okay.
A doozy.
Okay.
So let's get into it.
I'm
shall
sit
we?
Sit back and relax.
My spark title. He had one question. My spark sources, the podcast Heavyweight, hosted by Jonathan Goldstein, an article by Jeffrey Lyle Siegel on t2cononline.com, an article by Andrew Lappin on momentmag.com, elizastory.org, an article in the New York Times by Karen Blankfeld. Trigger warning, aka TW, aka T-dubs, there's some heavy shit in the spark. Do what you got to do to take care of yourself. Cams.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see an article in the New York Times? It was published back in December and the headline was Lovers in Auschwitz Reunited 72 Years Later. He had one question. Does that ring a bell?
Oh my God. No, but I am in
you
this.
Here for this? So this writer named Karen Blankfeld wrote a beautiful article for the New York Times about a man named David Wisnia and a woman named Helen Spitzer, her nickname, Zippy, which is a spark. It's a great nickname. It's a great pet name. It's a great everything. In her article, Karen Blankfeld tells how David, who was then 17, and Zippy, who was then 25, met in 1943 by the Auschwitz crematory, and how David immediately knew that Zippy was no regular inmate. She was always neat and clean and smelled good. She.
Wait, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Inmate?
Inmate.
Wait.
Inmate.
What year is this?
1943.
So they are in Auschwitz.
They're in
together.
Auschwitz.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Okay. And they meet by the crematory.
Okay, thank you for that clarity.
Yes.
Holy
thank you for
shit.
There's so much to cover. I'm probably sound zippy myself. So
no,
thanks
this
for
is
let's break
amazing.
It down. So Zippy was, David knew she was no regular inmate. She was always neat and clean and she smelled good. And she was a woman outside of the women's quarters, freely speaking to a male prisoner.
Interesting.
They were introduced by a fellow inmate at Zippy's request. And before David knew it, they were alone together. All the prisoners around them were gone. And he later realized that none of it was coincidental. It was all orchestrated by Zippy.
By Zippy.
Which I love. Go on and get what you need, Zippy girl.
Wow.
Anyway, they made a plan to meet again in a week. So a week later, David went as planned to meet between crematories 4 and 5. And he climbed on top of a makeshift ladder that was made up of like packages and bundles of prisoners' clothes. So imagine this sort of like tower of prisoners' clothes arranged into this sort of, and a ladder.
Not in boxes, but just piles of clothes.
It sounded like bundles. To me, it sounded like bundles.
Wow.
Again, Zippy had arranged it. She had arranged a space that they could crawl up into in the midst of hundreds of these bundles of clothing, and it was just large enough to fit the two of them.
Like, seated, standing, lying down. I'm so curious.
I'm going to go with lying down.
Zippy. So is what I'm picturing happening? Is that why they're meeting?
Yep.
From the jump?
Not the very first meeting.
Okay.
The second meeting.
Okay. Wow.
At the age of 93, David reminisced, I had no knowledge of what, when, where. She taught me everything.
Oh my.
So yes,
God.
Cams, if we are reading this correctly, Zippy saw David, was attracted to him, and orchestrated a way for them to spend precious time alone together and enjoy each other in these very extreme circumstances.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They became lovers and they would meet in their little space between the crematories amidst the bundles of clothing. Below the bundles of clothing, down on the ground, Zippy had paid fellow prisoners with food to keep watch for 30 to 60 minutes, and they were prepared to warn David and Zippy if a Nazi guard was coming.
How did she get enough food to like pay off other people? How are they? I'm sorry, but every time you say they're above the crematory, I'm just like,
I know.
What the? Oh my God.
There's so much going on here, but we're going to unpack
it. But people find a way to survive.
People find a way.
This is survival skills.
People find a way. It really reminds me of, did you ever read the book 1984, the Orwell book?
Ages ago, yeah.
It reminds me of how the characters in that book would find a way to kind of create these escapes for each other and come together and just frankly have recreational sex. Like,
because what else can you do? Like, it is a free, one of the free pleasurable things in this world when people have taken everything else from you.
Yeah. And if you're Zippy, you'll find a way.
Oh my God.
Get it, Zippy. I love Zippy. I love Zippy. So they also knew they were putting their lives in danger, but they really look forward to their dates with each other. And David said he felt special that Zippy had chosen him.
Of course.
Him. Yeah. While they were both Jewish inmates in Auschwitz, they were both also privileged prisoners. Trigger warning.
Mm-hmm.
David's original job was, this is so grim.
Mm.
He was assigned to the corpse unit and forced to collect the bodies of prisoners who committed suicide by throwing themselves against the electric fences.
Oh, no.
Can you even imagine? Imagine yourself, myself being forced to do a job like that. But the Nazis soon discovered that he was a talented singer, and so he was then chosen to entertain his captors. Zippy had an even more high-powered position, and this is amazing, and I never thought of this, but of course, she was the camp's graphic designer.
What?
Yes.
What?
Yes. She had come from Slovakia, where she had attended technical college and was the first woman in the region to finish an apprenticeship as a graphic artist. So she had usable skills.
What are they like in need of graphic designer?
We're going
like,
to get
on a regular
to it.
Basis.
We're going to get to
oh
it.
Oh my God.
We're
going
to get to it.
Ah!
She was among the first Jewish women to arrive in Auschwitz in March of 1942, along with about 2,000 other unmarried women. At first, she was assigned to this grueling demolition work at Birkenau, where she was malnourished, perpetually ill. She had typhus, malaria, diarrhea. Can you even imagine? And she's doing this grueling demolition work while sick. It's just the mind boggles. If that wasn't hideous enough, a chimney collapsed on her while she was working and it injured her back. But that accident might have been a blessing in disguise because through her connections, her ability to speak German, her graphic design skills, and sheer luck, Zippy got an office job.
Wow.
Here we go. What do you do if you're the graphic designer? One of her first assignments was mixing red paint and varnish to draw a vertical stripe on female prisoners' uniforms. So somebody has to make signs, put stripes that indicate, right. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that was one of her first jobs. Then she had another piece of her job where she started registering all the females that arrived to the camp. By the time Zippy met David, she was working in a shared office with another Jewish woman, and they were responsible for organizing Nazi paperwork and tracking the camp's labor force. So they were doing, in addition to her graphic design work, they were doing
administrative
like, work.
Wow.
And she was sharing another office. Amazing. I mean, I don't have the deepest knowledge of history, as we all know, but I hadn't thought of this.
The life, I mean, again, we're repeating things here, but the things that people did, the mind needs, you know, a way to not be experiencing what they're experiencing
every
moment.
Yeah, but also to work, to be creative, to be self-expressed, to make love, all of
That's
these
right.
things. Yeah. As her responsibilities grew, Zippy was free to move around within parts of the camp and sometimes was even allowed outside of the camps. She showered regularly. She didn't have to wear an armband. She used her position to help inmates and allies, and she used her design skills to manipulate paperwork and reassign prisoners to different job assignments different barracks. No, she was using her graphic design skills to like doctor and alter paperwork and also like help move people around and stuff like that. Yes. She had because of her position, she had access to official camp reports, which she shared with various resistance groups. Zippy.
Oh my God, Zippy.
Fucking badass, a bucket of sparks.
Fucking hero.
A hero. In fact, she was the subject of a book edited by someone named, I'm probably going to get this wrong, Jürgen Matthaus of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. In the book, Zippy is interviewed by 5 different historians, each chronicling her life from a different perspective.
Whoa.
I think that in and of itself is an amazing spark where you give appropriate attention to an amazing subject like
that's
that
right.
because Zippy
that's
was
right.
the shit and she lived this very remarkable life.
Yes.
And so I just, this gives me full body chills. The thought of really examining a subject like that from 5 different perspectives
right.
and putting it in one book.
These are like the small heroic
yes.
actions
yeah.
that people took during that war that didn't get, you know, all of the attention as like the big battles and the, you know, decisions that are made on a grand scale, but the subversive ways
yes.
that every human being was fighting the battle day to day.
How about that graphic design spark?
Holy
use your skills to doctor the paperwork. Come
That's
on.
That's incredible.
So back to Zippy and David.
Okay.
When they would meet up for their dates, which was about once a month, they didn't talk much because I think they were busy getting busy. But when they did talk, they would share brief snippets about themselves and their past. David's father had loved opera, which had sparked his love of singing. His dad and the rest of David's family died in the Warsaw Ghetto. Mm. Zippy also loved music, and she taught David this Hungarian folk song. So they spent their time together, I think mostly making love, but they would, you know, tell each other a little bit about each other. This is from this article. Karen Blankfeld, so good. For a few months, they managed to be each other's escape, but they knew these visits wouldn't last. One afternoon in 1944, they realized it would probably be their final climb up to their nook.
Mm.
The Nazis were transporting the last of the camp prisoners on death marches and destroying evidence of their crimes. Mm. Around them, death was everywhere. Still, the lovers planned a life together, a future outside of Auschwitz. They knew they would be separated, but they planned, after the fighting was done, to reunite. During this last rendezvous, they made a promise to each other that they would meet in Warsaw when the war was over at a community center. it took them 72 years.
Oh my God.
Which leads me to my spark today, finishing unfinished business.
Oh, Camion.
Camion, you are crying and we have so much more spark to go.
Okay, I have so many questions, but
do you want to ask
everything?
Them?
No, because I'm sure you're going to tell me. So
I'm going to tell you.
I'll ask if you don't tell me.
Okay, so finishing unfinished business. My friend Tom Schulteis and I talk about the power of finishing unfinished business all the goddamn time. We talk about it in life. We talk about it in the context of a workshop we created called Let Me Try That Again, which is a workshop about how to process failure, perceived failure. Sparks on Sparks. Let Me Try That Again is actually a benefit that our friends Jonathan Bernstein and Steve Pasquale dreamt up for the Performing Arts Project, where Broadway performers get to revisit a moment in their creative or performative lives where they just totally shit the bed. And then they get to do Me Try That Again, and they take another swing at the whole thing. The Let Me Try That Again concept and the workshop operate under the belief that as long as you're alive, you can clean things up, you can take another try at something, you can extend the story and write a new ending, you can finish some unfinished business.
Yeah.
It's best summed up in the words of John Lennon, everything will be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end.
Yeah.
So this,
that's a good one.
This touches on some of the stuff I talked about in my spark on The Art of Dying Well. In her book, The Art of Dying Well, Katie Butler refers to a TED talk given by an EMT named Matthew O'Reilly. In his work as an EMT, he has attended to many people dying on the side of the highway after automobile accidents. And he says, most people have three pieces of unfinished business. They have regrets and want to be forgiven. They fear they'll be forgotten and hope they'll be remembered. And they want to know that their lives had meaning. Mm-hmm. Katie Butler, in her book, goes on to say, ask yourself, what stands in the way right now of your dying in peace? What do you regret? What do you fear? Do you feel that your life has meaning? I'll add to that, sometimes the unfinished business can be a question that you need to have answered, some sort of open loop that needs to be closed, or something that just you want to resolve for yourself.
Yeah.
I believe that finishing unfinished business can be a powerful creative spark. And I've seen it again and again and again in all those performances at Let Me Try That Again.
Yeah.
Cams, I'm sure I've told you the story. Please enjoy it again. There's this amazing Broadway performer named Betsy Wolf, who I just think is the shit. And at Let Me Try That Again, Betsy told this story about when she had her first audition for the esteemed Broadway director, James Lapine. I think it was for a Sondheim show. And the night before, she decided she wasn't going to sing a Sondheim song she already knew. She was going to learn a new song.
Mm-hmm.
And not just any new song, but one of the fastest, most lyrically complicated of all of Sondheim's songs, which is saying so much. So at Let Me Try That Again, Betsy gives, oh my God, I wish there was a video of this. She gave this miraculous performance where she recreated her audition for Sondheim, singing this butchered version of a song called Another 100 People. Do you know that song?
I don't know it.
Oh my God. It's really fast. It goes, and another 100 people just got off the train and off the plane and they're looking at the bus and then
Yeah.
And her fuck ups were crazy. She was like, and another 100 people just got off of the bus and I'm riding the bus and the bus is named Gus. And it was... it was so fucking funny, because even if you're not a performer, you knew the pain just fucking up in a super high stakes situation. And then Betsy Wolf, Let Me Try That Again, by singing the song with the benefit of the correct lyrics and full preparation. And oh my God, I can honestly say I understood that song for the first time.
Wow.
It was a masterclass. It was a revelation. First it was so hilarious and just like the hilarious, but also out of pain. And then this gorgeous example of finishing unfinished business.
Yeah.
I think of another example, Eliza Hamilton, who, after her husband Alexander was killed in a duel, she set about to secure her husband's legacy. From the website elizastory.org, in 1806, Mrs. Isabella Graham, president of the Society for the Relief of Poor Widows with Small Children, needed help caring for six children whose widowed mothers had recently died. She enlisted the help of her recently widowed friend, Eliza Hamilton, whose husband, Alexander Hamilton, had been killed by Aaron Burr in a famous duel 2 years before. Eliza knew the hardship her husband had suffered as an orphan child of an unwed mother. In addition to raising their own seven children, the Hamiltons had adopted a daughter and opened their home to other orphaned or neglected children. Eliza called them little Alexanders.
Oh, God.
I know. Eliza joined forces with Mrs. Graham and other prominent women to create the Orphan Asylum Society in the city of New York, the city's first private orphanage. The orphanage. I think that is Eliza taking the opportunity to finish unfinished business. She might not be able to go back in time and ease the way for the orphan child that became her husband, but she can, let me try that again, in his honor and memory. And she's also finished the unfinished business of solidifying his legacy.
That's like, right.
So that's right. That to me, she worked so hard in the chapters of her life after he passed away. And I think so much of it was about completing unfinished business.
And she knew it was on her to do it, and or she knew it wouldn't get done.
Yeah. How you doing over there, Cam?
I'm okay.
How are you?
Yeah.
Taking you for a ride?
Yeah.
Sorry. Another example of finishing unfinished business. Oh, Camion.
Why?
Camion. This creative spark. Oh my gosh. There is a podcast called Heavyweight, hosted by Jonathan Goldstein. You might recognize Jonathan as a contributor to This American Life. He also hosted a podcast called Wiretap. Heavyweight is a podcast that I love, wherein Jonathan Goldstein helps someone find closure on some sort of event from their past. This might happen.
It could be anything.
And it is crazy how diverse the topics are. So it could be something like, Jonathan might help the victim of a car accident connect with a remorseful driver who struck that.
Oh,
yes.
God.
Or help a person who is not accustomed to saying it say the words, I love you, to a parent. He helps people finish unfinished business. Cams.
I'm thankful for him.
He is a very good podcaster. He's a fantastic storyteller. One of the most powerful episodes of Heavyweight features a juror who regretted the vote that they cast during a trial, which sentenced a person to death.
Oh, gosh.
Jonathan Goldstein brings together the man from the jury and the mother of the convicted man. And it is, for that, for the participants, especially the juror, it's intense. But I was going to sort of unpack the episode, but I would rather say just go listen to it. The title of the episode is Sven. Each person in the equation provides something for the other person. Each person is able to hear something that provides them peace or solace. And there is this, Jonathan Goldstein is pulling off a magic trick. There is this visceral, palpable sense that this great burden has been lifted off of the subject of that episode of the podcast.
And you can feel it in a podcast.
And you can feel
That's
it in a podcast. And thus the title of the podcast, Heavyweight. Fun sidebar, host Jonathan Goldstein's wife, Emily, suggested that the title of the podcast be Jonathan Goldstein Medicine Woman, which I think is a fantastic spark. In an interview on the New York Times Podcast Club, which is a spark, it's sort of like a book club, except everyone in the audience listens to a podcast episode, and then that audience convenes and a panel comes together to discuss the podcast, which I think is such a fun spark. Good job, New York Times.
Yeah.
Jonathan said he created the Heavyweight podcast around regret and I think finishing unfinished business, and he does it all with this really phenomenal mix. It's my favorite blend of sincerity and humor.
Mm-hmm.
It is the best. In an article on momentmag.com, Andrew Lapin writes, helping friends and strangers alike find catharsis and closure within themselves is no small task. That Goldstein gets there time and time again and makes his listeners feel the journey every step of the way is nothing short of a minor miracle.
I'm honestly in awe.
It is so cool the way... There's an episode, one of the first episodes I listened to, a really good friend of Jonathan's was the person who gave this Alan Lomax box set of recordings of sort of folk music that he gave it to this artist to be like, I think you would dig this. I think this would be a spark for you to make something out of.
Mm-hmm.
That artist was Moby, and he ended up making all of that really successful Moby music that samples the Alan Lomax recordings.
Wow.
And this friend, all he wanted, he's like, I want my box set back. I want my box set back. I think what he really wanted was to be acknowledged as the person who handed Moby the spark. But it's a really interesting, they go and they meet with Moby. Like they go and they,
wow.
And it's, that is a fascinating episode. It's a great example of what it looks like on the outside, what it feels like on the inside.
Yeah.
Because Moby talks about, gosh, this is sparks on sparks on sparks on tangent sparks, but Moby talks about how at the height of his success when he was just like everywhere, everything, crushing it, top of the charts, he was it was one of the most depressed, isolated times of his life.
Oh, gosh.
So it's a really interesting
thing.
Yeah. I love this podcast. I love it.
I can't wait to listen.
Listeners, you may feel differently. I really enjoyed it.
I can't wait to listen.
Because there's something about the satisfaction. It reminds me of your puzzle piece spark. The satisfaction of completing something is very satisfying.
And the alleviating that nagging, that I think is in your subconscious at every moment of every day when you have an unfinished thing.
Yes.
It's in there and you can quiet it.
You can resolve it and it can rest. I love it. The thing I like about finishing unfinished business in our creativity is that you get to explore something, find peace with it, and then make something potentially awesome out of it. I think as humans, there's so much that needs to be done and completed. So it's super satisfying to even simply bear witness to completion, like the Heavyweight podcast. So even if you're not finishing the unfinished business, you could be the artist or writer or documentarian who captures a piece of unfinished business being finished.
That's right.
Like the podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
But Jonathan Goldstein is also a catalyst. He's not just a passive observer. He's also really bringing people together and helping people get past some things that have kept them from finishing their business.
Mm-hmm.
To that end, let us return to Karen Blankfeld's story in the New York Times about Zippy and David. It's an afternoon in 1944. Zippy and David are up in their nook for the final time.
Mm-hmm.
By this point, while most prisoners made it past a few months in Auschwitz, Zippy and David had survived for more than 2 years.
Oh my God.
In Auschwitz alone, 1.1 million people were murdered. So Zippy and David had beat extraordinary odds already.
Oh, God.
But now the Nazis are transporting the last of the camp prisoners on death marches and destroying evidence of their crimes. Zippy and David know they're going to be separated, but they promise each other that they will meet in Warsaw when the war is over at a community center.
Mm-hmm.
David leaves Auschwitz before Zippy on one of the last transports out of camp. He's transferred to the Dachau concentration camp, and soon after, during a death march from Dachau, he happens upon a hand shovel. He strikes an SS guard and he runs.
Oh my God.
Yes. The next day, can you imagine the fucking in the moment courage?
Oh God.
Yeah.
To see opportunity and take it.
The next day, while hiding in a barn, he hears what he thinks are Soviet troops approaching. Again, the courage. He runs out to the tanks and hopes for the best, and it turns out to be Americans. David cannot believe his good fortune. Since he is 10 years old, he has dreamt of singing opera in New York. His mother's two sisters had emigrated to the Bronx in the 30s, and he had memorized their address. And Karen Blankfeld describes it as it was almost like a prayer. Mm-hmm. Their address was like a prayer he recited while he was in the camp. And here he is face to face with soldiers from the 101st Airborne. They hear his tale. They adopt him. They feed him. They give him a uniform. They hand him a machine gun. They teach him how to use it. And he decided Europe was his past. He didn't want anything to do with it anymore. He said at that moment, he became 110% American. Even though I know, and I know you know and love this time period in history. So,
well, my grandpa was 101st Airborne. Yeah. Yeah. That is an amazing story.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That really narrows down the number of
how
people.
How many people were members of the 101st Airborne?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
Okay. I don't have any sense of anything. So is it like 10,000 people or is it like 100 people?
It's somewhere in between, but somewhere it's definitely not 10,000.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I am so bad. Yeah. History, numbers, you name it. Okay. So even though as a Pole, he couldn't become a full-fledged GI, David performed many jobs after the war with the American Army. One of his jobs was he sometimes drove to the displaced persons camp in the city of Feldafing to deliver supplies. Once he joined the Americans, though, his plan to meet Zippy in Warsaw was no longer even a consideration for him. America was his future.
It was America or bust.
Yeah, it was America, America, America. Meanwhile, Zippy is among the last to leave the camp alive. She goes to other camps before being evacuated on a death march. She and a friend escape the march by removing the red stripe that she herself had once painted on their uniforms, which allowed them to blend in with the locals who were fleeing. How about that?
You
put the stripes on, you take the stripes off.
She knew how to take it off.
I think she knew.
I need to know that story.
She probably knew. She had mixed the paint and the varnish to make the stripes. She probably was the best person.
Wow.
The most qualified person to remove it.
Oh my God.
So millions of survivors were displaced and Europe is just teeming with displaced persons camps. Some 500 such camps materialized in Germany. Amidst all the chaos, Zippy makes it to the first all-Jewish displaced persons camp in the American zone of occupied Germany, a camp called Feldafing, the same camp that David is delivering supplies to.
You're kidding.
The odds that they would be in the same place is incredible.
You are kidding.
And David said, I would drive over there to Feldafing, but I had no idea she was there. They didn't know.
Oh my God.
Soon after she arrives in Feldafing, Zippy marries a man named Erwin Teichauer. Now 27, Zippy is again running things. She's distributing food among the displaced people. She and her husband go on to devote years of their lives to humanitarian causes. They go on missions through the United Nations to Peru and Bolivia and Indonesia. Throughout their travels, she continues to learn new languages and use her design skills to help populations in need.
Wow.
There's a spark for you,
yes.
Particularly pregnant women and new mothers. Her existence is not defined by her experience as a Holocaust survivor. She has this much richer life and there is so much that she and her husband achieve together and they end up in New York. Meanwhile, David ends up in New York too.
What?
Yes. But in a rush to make up for lost time, he throws himself into New York City life and he's going to dances and he's going to parties and he gets this job selling encyclopedias. The story's got it all. In 1947, at a wedding, he meets his future wife, Hope, and they move to Pennsylvania, and he becomes vice president of sales for the encyclopedia company until his career as a professional cantor takes off. Years later, a mutual friend tells David that Zippy is in New York City. David, who had told his wife about Zippy, thought that this might be an opportunity to reconnect, and he could finally ask her the question he had always wanted to ask her. Their mutual friend arranges a meeting. David drives 2 hours from Levittown, Pennsylvania to Manhattan, and he waits at a hotel lobby across from Central Park. But Zippy never shows up. David says he found out afterwards that Zippy decided it wouldn't be smart. She was married. She had a husband. But David keeps tabs on Zippy, and his family continues to grow. 4 children, 6 grandchildren. In 2016, he again attempts to reconnect with Zippy and finally, she agrees to a visit. In August 2016, David takes two of his grandchildren. They drive 2 hours from Levittown to Manhattan. It's been 72 years since he's last seen.
72 years.
72 years. David and his grandchildren arrive at Zippy's apartment. They find her lying in a hospital bed. She never had any kids. She's been alone since her husband died in 1996. Mm. She's been looked after by caretakers. She's become increasingly blind and deaf. At first, Zippy doesn't recognize David. And then he leans in real close and her eyes open wide.
Oh.
And there's this recognition and this flurry of conversation and catching up. And they tell each other where they've been since they parted. They talk for 2 hours. Then he finally asks the one question he has wanted to ask her all of these years. Did she have something to do with the fact that he'd managed to survive in Auschwitz all that time? Zippy holds up 5 fingers and says, I saved you 5 times from bad shipment. And David says, I knew she would do that. And then she goes on, I was waiting for you. After she escaped the death march, she waited for him in Warsaw. Zippy had followed the plan, but David never came.
Oh.
She tells David that she had loved him. He tells her that he had loved her too. After that visit, David and Zippy never saw each other again. She died in 2018 at 100 years old.
Ugh.
But I think that by the time she died, it seems like they had finished what was unfinished between them. So what has been made of it?
Oh,
how you doing over there, Kims?
Just don't mind me.
Just over there mopping it up with a rag. Oh, baby Kims.
But what has been made of it?
Can't yet. If you're Zippy, you use your design skills to help people.
Oh, that's incredible.
The ways that she helped people throughout her entire life with her her intelligence and her language skills and her design skills. Yeah. It's really something. If you're Karen Blankfeld, you write this gorgeous story in the New York Times that documents people finishing unfinished business. And I want to say, I have only scratched the surface. Her writing takes it so much deeper. Mm. I encourage everyone to find the story and read it. If you're Jonathan Goldstein, so you make heavyweight and you surface and then help facilitate the completion of other people's unfinished business. And you document it so beautifully with humor and depth. Another idea, you can also transform unfinished business into gifts. So my friend, Tom Schulteis, who I just mentioned, tells this story about his mom, Carol. Carol viewed her Aunt Rose as a mother figure. And Aunt Rose, at some point, made a tooth fairy pillow for Carol's daughter, Michelle. The tooth fairy pillow was this little pillow, had a little pocket in it. And when Michelle would lose a tooth, they'd put the tooth in the pocket, and then the tooth fairy would come in the night, take the tooth, leave a little money in the pocket. In my day, it was a quarter. I'm sure it's more now. But many years later, Aunt Rose passed away, which was a great loss for Carol because she really viewed Aunt Rose as someone who loved her unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Many years later, Carol's kids were helping her clear stuff out of the house, and Carol was trying not to look at everything because she can have a hard time of letting go of material objects that she's sentimentally attached to. And her kids ended up throwing away the tooth fairy pillow. And Carol remembers lifting the lid of the trash can, seeing the pillow, and deciding in the moment she had to let it go, that she had too many things in her life. She had to let it go. She closed the lid. That was it. Then for the next, I'm not exaggerating, 13 years, Carol would bring up again and again and again and again the pain and regret of letting the pillow go and not just grabbing it. So Tom had heard his mom, Carol, tell the story over and over again for 13 years. So one Mother's Day, Tom worked with his mother-in-law, Winnie, to make Carol a new tooth fairy pillow. He found similar fabric. He worked with Winnie on the design. He wrote a little poem and put it in the little pocket of the tooth fairy pillow. So Tom sent it to his mom, Carol, with the instructions that she had to be on the phone with him when she opened it. And when she opened it and saw what it was, she couldn't even speak. And though it wasn't the original pillow, Carol now had something to replace that painful loss.
Yeah.
And Tom acknowledged it was an object, and it's obviously much easier to replace than, say, a person. But there was a lesson that he learned from it, that there are opportunities to continue a story. It doesn't have to be final. His mother now has that pillow in one of her display cases, and he's never heard her talk about it in the same way again. He was glad he could bring some healing to her. He had extended the story and written a new ending for it.
That's right. That's beautiful.
So gifts are an idea. I think someone should make a film or a musical or something about Zippy and David.
Oh my God.
And these two characters that sort of like, you know, it starts with this, like literally starts with a bang, and it's like sort of like, and then history and time take them apart from each other. And then by the end, they make their way back to each other. It's so incredible. Star-crossed.
It's incredible.
But also I encourage people, if you're listening to this, it goes back to, you know, if you're on the side of the highway and you're feeling life drain out of you, you don't have to wait to that moment. Now, ask yourself, what is unfinished? What would I like to resolve before I go? I think that's a good place to start with some sparks.
I think that letters as well. I've read, you know, and
it's a good idea.
Use in therapy as well. So you can either send them or not send them. But the process of writing the letters and saying the things that you need to have said can also provide that similar sense of completion.
Writing apologies.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiving people.
Forgiving, my gosh.
Forgiveness.
That's so often the closure and completion that people need.
Yeah. So,
Suze, what an amazing spark.
Oh, Cammie, I feel like I can't take credit for any of it. I feel like so much of it is about, well, Zippy and David, who lived this life. But Karen Blankfeld, who is just this gorgeous writer who takes basically lifetimes, literally, of information about people and cohesives it into this beautiful narrative in this article. It's really gorgeous. And one of the rare stories that comes out of that time period that is, it's still bittersweet, but there is sweetness in it, that people found a way to have love amongst the destruction and the chaos.
I think the love is the only way that you survive any of that. It's like they gave themselves a little mental and emotional escape.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
A little escape hatch that they could go to for even minutes at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cammie, Suze.
Anything else about that?
Oof.
Any unfinished business about that business?
Man, no, but it does get me thinking about, all right, so what unfinished business do I have and what should I, you know, complete? It's really thought-provoking.
I've got a few that I'm percolating on, but I just am going to keep my eyes open for it too.
Yeah.
For myself, but also for others. Not to be a nudge, not to get up in everybody's business, but just to let people know that sometimes the pain of unfinished business, there are ways to extend, even if no other parties involved in the situation are still alive. I think as long as you live, there are ways to extend the story and find resolution in it.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's it.
Oh, Suze.
Oh, we hope this put another bunch of sparks in your file. If there is a spark you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, why don't you submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com. And I will tell you, we are getting some good sparks coming into us to make up a new mailbag. So get in on that mailbag.
Get in. We'll even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you have to share a creative risk that you have taken recently.
Oh, and hey, here's another thing. Follow us on social media at The Spark File, and be sure to subscribe to this podcast. There's so much homework associated with this podcast.
Who
knew?
Sure
to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you like this podcast, share it with people you love. If you didn't like it, in the words of Zen master Shunryu Suzuki, not always so.
If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we are writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that has been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got to conceive it. You got to dream weave it. You got to tell yourself you can create whatever you want. And then you got to believe it.
You got to take it
and make it. Bye, friends and sparklers.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files.